Welcome to the Silver Surfer Task Podcast. My name is Sonia Rappaport.
My name is Willie Simpson.
And today, Willie, we're taking a break from the X-Men. We're going to spend a little time with our other friend, the Silver Surfer.
Perhaps a much-needed break from pumping out a nearly two-hour movie podcast
the
past, like, 3 weeks.
You did post, a four-hour video
yeah.
in the X-Men Task Facebook group, of all the Silver Surfer Tasks episodes strung together.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that on YouTube that all the episodes are available to watch for free.
I know. It's incredible.
The video I posted, it had them all strung together in 1 4-hour video, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But I think you can watch them individually for free.
Yeah, I did see... I don't know if all of them are there, but I did see some of them on YouTube.
Right.
Single episodes.
Yeah. In one form or the other, the entire series is on YouTube.
But hopefully this podcast won't run... 4 hours.
No, we're not gonna we're not gonna break down the plots of every single episode as we would a normal X-Men episode or the X-Men movies. We're just gonna talk generally about the series.
Yes.
So you had never seen the show before I showed it to you this week, is that correct?
Exactly. I didn't even know this show existed when I was a kid.
Yeah. It was definitely it was on my radar as a kid and I watched it.
Although I guess this came out in 1998.
Right, so a year after the X-Men ended, pretty much.
I wasn't really a kid anymore.
Right, so I was 13.
Yeah.
Or maybe 13 turning 14. I can't remember. Either 12 turning 13 or 13 turning 14.
In 1998, you were 14.
Okay, there you go. You know better than I do. Even though you weren't there at the time, you
I
don't know
math.
For sure. Okay.
Right, so I was 12. I don't know, maybe I was, not quite as interested in, this type of, comic programming at that point.
Right. I definitely watched this show with great interest, when it was on TV.
I watched the show with great interest now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll get into it.
It was incredible.
You love this show.
I do.
So you're going to have to steer a lot of this conversation. Because we sort of casually watched all 13 episodes in the past week.
I know. I actually now wish I had been paying closer attention the whole time.
Well, I mean, it's not like it was... it is a serialized show, so...
I know. I mean, it's fine. I'm going to probably go back and watch all of them again. And
really? You liked it that much?
Yeah.
Wow.
So...
That's awesome. Yeah, I always love the Silver Surfer. It's hard to explain why. It's like one of these...
he's like a badass outer spaceman.
Well,
why.
He's not a badass. That's would not describe his personality.
Not his personality, but his powers and his look and all the stuff he can do.
The levels of his powers are badass.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily even describe his look as badass either.
It's not.
Man, you really love the Silver Surfer.
I know.
I describe him as a sparkly silver man twinkling through the cosmos.
He's not sparkly.
Well, not in this show. I think you could interpret him as sparkly depending on the artist. He sparkles.
I don't know.
So. Okay, whatever. That's open for debate. So this show is quite the artifact of 90s animated television. So it comes on the heels of the X-Men animated series. It's pretty much, I guess it's made by the same production company, Saban. It has different executive producers, although if you watch the credits, a few of the producers from X-Men are involved in this one. I think the guy Will Maginot, I forget how to pronounce his name, he's one of the producers I saw in the credits. Definitely a lot of the voice work from X-Men is involved in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You hear familiar voices, the actor who played Cyclops, Professor X, Beast. Who else? Was there a few others we heard? Do you remember? That were from X-Men. Oh, the guy who does Magneto appears as some various characters.
Yeah.
He actually, I think, appears as several characters. But, yeah, so it's, cool to hear the X-Men voice cast. So that's, a big incentive, I think, for X-Men fans to check the show out, personally. Because we don't expect all of our listeners to have watched the show, remembered it, even heard about it, like you, Sonia.
Yeah.
So it's really... This is more, a recommendation podcast, I would say.
I agree.
A general series breakdown, themes, tones, things we liked, things that stood out to us, and what we think it did right, what we think it did wrong, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the beginning a bit, I think it's pretty amazing that this was the next major animated series after X-Men that the Saban and Marvel team wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, Silver Surfer, he's kind of an obscure character, sort of.
And I think in a way it's hard to make him relatable because so much of these stories don't take place on Earth.
Right.
They're a lot of them don't even reference Earth. It has nothing to do with, like,
in fact,
where we are and
the
live.
Stuff that has to do with Earth in this show, they excise the most famous aspect of the Silver Surfer from the series.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, his origins tied to the Fantastic Four.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting that they rewrite the story a
just
little
for
bit.
Just not having the rights.
Right. I guess the idea is, I don't think that, it's not that they couldn't have used the Fantastic Four, although there was a concurrent Marvel series around this time that was the Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it may have just been that, but as we saw in the X-Men show, they really didn't seem to have any rules about which Marvel properties they could use. So I just think they want it to be about the Silver Surfer, not about, like, a major Marvel characters like the Fantastic Four.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Like,
yeah,
give
I think
him his
it does
own thing, you know?
Right. It's done well. It's not so upsetting to get rid of the Fantastic Four from the story.
Yeah.
So
to us anyway. I mean, there might be someone out there who disagrees.
I mean, I actually kind of do disagree in a way. Like, ideally I would love the Fantastic Four to have just been cameos in the origin. But you know, like, the way they did it is good enough that I'm not complaining. I'm just, like I said, there's something about the show. I'm just happy and kind of startled that the Silver Surfer animated cartoon show ever even existed in the first place. It's just such a weird idea for a TV show.
Yeah.
And he's such a weird character to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I was trying to say, like, the Silver Surfer, I mentioned before, I said he's obscure. He's not exactly obscure. He's just like he's a B to C level Marvel character.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a way that, like, the quality of his storytelling or his character isn't B to C. It's just that he's a side character.
Right.
He's not, like, a real star of the universe in the way Spider-Man is, Wolverine is, or, you know, well, even the Fantastic Four.
Again, because he's not really humanized that much. Like, he's a little bit unrelatable because he's just so, like, everything's black and white between good and bad, sort of, in his storytelling. He's extremely moral. He's, like, the moral compass mm-hmm. that you would want, you know? And, like, yeah, he's done bad things, but it's because he had his memory erased, so he didn't know he was doing bad things.
Right. But in this version, anyway.
In this version.
Right.
But there aren't really any personality traits that are, like, quirky or like, human, you know? Like,
well, you've read, you know, I introduced you to those Dan Slott Silver Surfer comics, which are very modern.
Yeah.
And they're ridiculously awesome, right?
Yeah, they're great.
Like, what would you, do you remember from reading those, if you picked up on a personality of the Silver Surfer, would you say it was the same in a modern adaptation of a comic book that's in the comic book continuity versus, like, the animated series from 1998?
I mean, the things that give him personality are not actually his, I think. In the comics, it was like, he gets, like, a human friend, and
right.
his human friend has a lot
What's
of quirks
her name
and
again?
Personality. Dawn Greenwood.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so, like, he kind of, like, a lot of the storytelling that's relatable is through her life, not through his. He himself, I don't really know what his personality traits are still, right?
Right, like, so you don't remember reading the comics, the newer comics, that, like, you didn't pick up too much of a personality.
I mean, did I miss something, like,
from what you described before?
Do you have a strong sense of
his personality? No, not at all. I think
he's
actually
morally good.
Right, strengthens
That's
your
it,
point, yeah.
Right, like, so
he's from a planet of, like, philosophical weirdos.
Right, and, like, from the standpoint of his planet, he is a little bit of a weirdo because he doesn't want to just, like, live on Zenla, his planet,
He's
and
restless.
Enjoy the peace.
He's like Luke
he wants
Skywalker.
To, like, go out there and travel and see and explore.
Wow.
Which, like, in itself makes him odd for them, but then it's like, once he gets out there, like,
he immediately regrets it and only wants to return home.
Yes, but also it's not, he's a very, like, I don't know, he's watching stuff, and mm-hmm. he intervenes to, like, save people's lives and stuff when he can. But, like, that's his one personality trait, I guess, is that he's an explorer.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty good. He's a restless wanderer,
uh-huh.
right? He's a wish fulfillment fantasy wrapped up in a tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, there's something very appealing about his archetype. I just mentioned Luke Skywalker as a reference point, although the Silver Surfer predates Luke Skywalker.
Mm.
Someone like a restless kid who wants to like get into action and adventure and leave the confines of his boring world.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sort of like enters a world bigger and more like with the way higher emotional stakes than he ever could have realized.
Yeah.
So he, you know, that's like his basic like archetype.
I mean, I guess that is relatable to a lot of people, and I guess that does give him a personality one way or another.
But it's like you said, it's not like his personality doesn't, it's not so quirky though.
Yeah.
There's nothing, he's very pure-hearted.
Right.
He's very much, he's like a blank slate a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which is part of the point of the character. And honestly, so let's talk about the origin of the character a little bit.
Okay.
There's a bit of a controversy. The character is pretty much solely created by Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
So he was drawn an issue of the Fantastic Four, and the Marvel method was such that Jack Kirby would pretty much draw all the issues and probably plot them himself. You know, Stan Lee would claim that he would, like, write a summary of a plot, and then Jack Kirby would take that and, like, draw the whole thing. But really, I think if you, like, read stuff like the Untold Marvel Comics History and other, like, deep dive interviews with Jack Kirby, he pretty much plotted most of them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Stan would just get the finished product and fill in the dialogue bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't, like, want to shortchange Stan Lee, because, one, that actually, like, fills in a lot of color to actually write the dialogue of the comics, even if the plot's already laid out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's, like, significant debate as to, like, what Stan Lee did and what Jack Kirby did. So that I'm not going to be able to resolve personally. But the point is, the reason of mentioning all that stuff is that there's a great deal of contention between Stan and Jack over the Silver Surfer specifically. So basically, Jack Kirby invented the Silver Surfer. Stan Lee liked the character so much that he just took the character and started his own Silver Surfer solo comic book. And that really pissed off Jack Kirby, who wanted to be involved. And then furthermore, past that, Jack Kirby did not like the creative decisions that Stan Lee came up with regarding the origin and the direction of the Silver Surfer comic itself.
Hmm.
So, for instance, when Jack Kirby introduced the Silver Surfer in the comic books, most famously, he's the Herald of Galactus, he flies to Earth, the Fantastic Four meet him, and he's just this blank slate that doesn't have any emotion or feeling, or, like, much of a personality, speaking of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fantastic Four, like, on his adventures on Earth, the Silver Surfer, like, I think he meets Ben Grimm's girlfriend, who is blind. Her name is escaping me. She's a very famous character. But anyway, she convinces him, or, like, teaches him about love and about, like, emotions and creativity and, like, human stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, through that kind of influence, he realizes what he's been doing for Galactus is wrong. He rebels against Galactus, helps the Fantastic Four, and Galactus punishes him by exiling him to Earth.
Hmm.
Now, the point is, like, Jack Kirby's intention was that the Silver Surfer was just created out of whole cloth by Galactus, that he was not a person ever, right? Oh.
Okay.
So when Stan Lee just said, well, oh, I really like this character, I'm going to make my own comic book, he said, screw all that. He created a more traditional backstory for Silver Surfer, as we've been discussing. He's from this planet called Zen-La. His real name is Norrin Rad. He had a girlfriend named Shalabal.
Mm-hmm.
And he sacrifices himself to save his planet, and he becomes the Herald of Galactus, who then wipes his memories, and that's the whole origin.
Right.
Jack Kirby did not like this. A lot of this stuff like led to the eventual falling out between the two as a creative pair that was able to work together.
Not this specifically, but other decisions like this.
Yeah,
too,
decisions
right?
like yeah. this. How, you know, Stan would just take stuff that Jack would make and change it.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, didn't have as much editorial say as Stan Lee did.
Right.
And it was kind of bullshit because Jack was doing most of the work, like creating a lot of stuff.
Hmm.
You know, allegedly. Like, I don't like to be unfair to Stan Lee because I really think he did a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you could read lots of books on this. The Untold Story of the Marvel Universe or something, that book will give you everything you need to know. Anyway, so that's like the controversy behind the Silver Surfer, that it was Jack's baby, but Stan stole him. I thought Stan did a great job with him. I have the two volumes of the Marvel Masterworks in my collection are that are like the first like 10 or 12 issues of the Silver Surfer comic that Stanley created. And he did the art with John Buscema. And I think those comics are awesome. They're total 1960s Marvel Silver Age classics. You know, in the comics, like I said, we get the whole origin story. He's confined to Earth because he betrayed Galactus. Galactus creates an invisible barrier around the planet Earth that Silver Surfer can't escape from, which is like death to him because he, you know, is used to soaring through the cosmos. But he's just limited to this one world, and he has to learn from humans. And he kind of hates them. He sees human beings for how ugly they are, for how they make war and how they're racist and how they're petty over money and territory and stuff.
All this stuff that didn't exist on Zenla.
Right. And he's just and he's always trying to help the humans, but much like Spider-Man, he's like they shit on him. Yeah. You know, they're afraid of him. They don't like let him like assimilate into society. I think in one episode he actually tries to just like live on the surface of Earth, and it just doesn't work out. They just treat him as an outcast. And but those stories are really great Marvel sci-fi. You know, he fights. You know, at one point he travels to. Where does Thor live? Asgard. Mm-hmm. And he fights Thor because it was all like a scheme done by Loki. And another, my favorite comic is when he fights Mephisto, who's basically just a stand-in for Satan, but I don't think they're allowed to use Satan. So Mephisto's this like ultra-powerful being of pure evil in the Marvel Universe, one of these like great elemental characters, which is what's so awesome about the Silver Surfer. He meets a lot of these elemental, larger than like the universe characters. Mephisto tries to tempt him with, you know, jewels and freedom and love and stuff in order to, like, spoil his spirit, which is so pure that it's an affront to a being as evil as Mephisto. So you have stories like that. There's one, I won't keep talking about the comics, but there's one that's, like, the best one is he decides, like, well, what if I travel so fast that I go forward in time, maybe the time barrier will have evaporated and I can be free of Earth. So he does this and he like accidentally travels like a million years into the future. And he's like, oh, great, the barrier's gone. But then he sees Earth, it's completely devastated. He's like, oh, that sucks. You know, too bad for Earth. All right, I'm going to fly to Zen La, you know. And as he's flying, he notices in the universe all the planets and life is destroyed everywhere he goes. It's like a great plague has like beset the entire universe. And then he like finally discovers some beings that are alive, but they're completely enslaved like cavemen. Like they've been almost devolved to cavemen-like. And he discovers that there is one creature who's like a mutant. I forget his name. It's like called like the leader or something, or the master. I don't know. He is like just an indestructible being that was born at some point in the past, and he conquered not the galaxy but the entire universe, and he enslaved all of life. And he can't be defeated. He can't be destroyed. Like nothing can be done to him. So it's up to the Silver. You know, spoilers. He goes back in time and kills. I think he kills this dude as a baby. So, like it's like killing Hitler as a baby. Basically, is the plot line because he has to fix the timeline. And then when he returns back to the present, he's still trapped on Earth. So those are like that's a taste of the comics. They're awesome. They're great. Everyone should read them. And then we were talking about the more modern comics with Dan Slott. They're amazing too. We've talked about them on previous podcasts. But essentially, if Marvel does a Silver Surfer movie or a TV show or something in the future, they have to just take from Dan Slott's work. It's that good. Right? Wouldn't you agree? Like, him and Don Greenwood riding together throughout the galaxy is a great pair.
You know, yeah, but also, now that I've seen, like, all the episodes of this and, like, know a little more about the Silver Surfer, what about Shalabal?
You have a soft spot for Shalabal.
Yeah.
I think, you know, honestly, I would have agreed with you until, like, one of the last few issues of the Dan Slott Silver Surfer run where we meet Shalabal, and she's, like, a big bitch. You know?
I know, but that's not how she is.
I don't know. Who's to say how she is? I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, the Silver Surfer had a lot of comics in the 80s, I think he was revived. I think the initial Stan Lee comic was canceled. It was not popular.
Yeah.
Despite it being, like, a cool countercultural touchstone of the 60s, you know, because it was very psychedelic in its artwork. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was canceled, though. It wasn't that popular. It was revived in the 80s and early 90s. There's a long run of very complicated cosmic comics, you know. But it's like it's waned in popularity throughout the years. I think those comics were canceled, or maybe they'd bring back the Silver Surfer in limited edition runs. Like the Dan Slott thing we're talking about, that was just a special, it was almost like a special graphic novel set.
Yeah.
It was designed to be a graphic novel. I'm sure it came out as individual comics, but it was like a story with a beginning and an end.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Silver Surfer is just not like a super mainstream character in the Marvel Universe, even though he is kind of, he's well known in a sense.
Mm.
So anyway, this just goes back to the original point that it's weird that they even made a show about it. I don't know the full backstory of like why the show got made. My guess is that Stan Lee, as you said, was an executive producer of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's always I think at times Stan Lee said the Silver Surfer is his favorite character. So maybe he was the influence that said, wouldn't that be a great cartoon?
Yeah.
Is the Silver Surfer. And I think it is.
Yeah, it's awesome. So just like a quick note about the animation style. Saban is updating in this, and they're using throughout like a combination of cel animation and like digital graphics or some like computer animation, basically.
And it looks good. It looks better than Spider-Man, which does that too. And this comes out a little bit after Spider-Man ended, or maybe was about to end.
I think they just use it to better effect, you know? Like, I guess we'll talk about it at some point, but in Spider-Man, a lot of the computer graphics are like...
The city blocks of New York City. Yeah,
like the glass buildings. I don't know. There's something very, like, impersonal about them, like, even more so than they really are in real life.
Right.
Like, you can always tell. But... I don't know. I mean, in the show, you can always tell also, but it's stuff like explosions in outer space.
Or Galactus's eyeballs.
Yeah, Galactus, which is like, it doesn't bother me for some reason that it's computer animation.
No, well, it makes sense because he's a character of unfathomable technological advancement.
Right.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how the series begins. It's a three-part beginning. And basically you get the backstory of Norrin Radd, which is a name I never enjoyed, nor enjoy saying out loud. It's just like we said, he is like a restless dude on this planet called Zenla, which has achieved a kind of ideal paradise of a planet. They don't even explore space anymore because there's no point. You know, they just kind of know everything.
Yeah.
It's a planet where other creatures come and other beings come to, like, learn about their philosophy and their meditation practices because it's so advanced.
Yeah.
Kind of like, reminds me a bit of Krypton. Just a okay. little bit. You know, like, the basic premise of Krypton, it's like a super advanced society of scientists and things.
Right.
And, you know, they're at peace. Norrin Radd is... like restless, he wants to explore the universe, he wants to get involved in adventures, and everyone on Zen Law is like, well, what's the point of adventure? You should just meditate.
Yeah,
you know? Like
everything you need is within.
Right, you shouldn't like desire so much.
Yeah.
And what was I gonna say about that? Basically, the one thing I didn't like about the backstory too here presented in the show, I'm not sure if it's an element in the comics, it might be, he's also pegged to be the next leader of Zen Law,
mm-hmm.
which is like a dumb, like...
It you just, wish he was more of like an everyman yeah, on Zen Law.
It's like dumb to make him like, oh, he's the prince as well, you know, like
yeah.
it just makes
like
him...
Why?
He's more important than he should be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a parallel to Buddha, like the story of Buddha a little bit,
mm-hmm.
like because there's a lot of, I think, that going on here.
I can see that.
Like, because Buddha was like supposed to be an Indian prince before he renounced all that and just became the great religious philosopher or whatever.
Right.
So that's the backstory. Galactus, the world devourer, or no, the devourer of worlds,
mm-hmm.
stops by Zen Law, which is quite tragic. And so
he's
let's talk
awesome
about Galactus.
Villain.
Yeah.
He's so cool. I mean, he's like part robot or something, right? But like...
Right. He's beyond robot. He's not a robot.
I know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. He's like might as well be half robot,
yeah,
seemingly.
Right. Just the name Galactus is incredible.
Right.
And the
That's
fact
a Jack
that
Kirby
he like
invention, I'm guessing.
Eats planets.
To survive.
To survive is like really crazy.
And what's interesting is he's not eating the planets to be malicious. He's beyond good and evil.
Right.
He's an elemental force of nature.
Yeah.
Like, he has to do it, like, it's always hinted at in the comics, and they do eventually explain why he has to do it,
mm-hmm.
but he serves a role in the universe. Like, he balances out the cosmic scales.
Right.
He's not, like, doing it with any malicious intent. He's, like, doing it for a reason. And they don't really touch that in this show so much.
No. I mean, in this show, he's evil. Like, he's a villain character.
He's like, at first, I think they hint that he's more complex philosophically, morally.
I guess so, because we know that, but, you know.
They hint at it in the show, too. He's not a bad guy. He has no plan or nothing. He's just doing what he does.
He's just eating worlds. Right, yeah. Well, but without concern for whether there's life on the planets
or
not.
Well, I mean, he says, I think he says most famously in the comics, he says something like in the show, too, he says, do you care about stepping on an anthill or something? Like, do you pay attention to, like, a bunch of insects when you're walking on the ground?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of, like, magnitudes of scale.
Some people do.
I know, but Galactus needs to eat to survive.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's an interesting character.
Yeah.
I like how in the original comic book version, like when Jack Kirby first introduced him, the design wasn't quite set yet.
Uh-huh.
So his belt is like a big G belt buckle. It's pretty stupid. One of the cooler aspects of Galactus, it's not done in the show, but it's explained in the comics that... So Galactus looks like a big doofy white man with a purple headdress and a purple like outfit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why is he looking like a human being? Well, he doesn't. In the comics, they explain that when he comes to your world, his face looks like whoever, like, the dominant intelligent species is. Because the creatures gazing upon him can't even fathom what his actual face looks like. Like, that's how... That their brains automatically imbue him with a face that is of their own.
That's crazy.
And that is crazy on so many levels. It's such an awesome explanation.
Uh-huh.
Because you can get real biblical about it. And he's meant to be a god. Like, Jack Kirby designed him explicitly to be a new sort of god.
Yeah, right.
And so it's like God, according to, you know, the Old Testament, like, God created man in his own image.
Right.
So Galactus is not the god of Earth. He's not the god of any of these planets he eats. But the fact that the creatures see Galactus in their own image is really telling.
Uh-huh.
And really cool. And it's like, and he doesn't, it's not like it's just his face that changes. It's like his whole appearance.
Because,
mm-hmm. for instance, if he goes to like a bug planet, he looks like an enormous like bug creature with weird technology coming out of him, you
right.
know? So they draw him in like very, like, there's actually a famous, you can Google it, there's a famous comic book panel where they explain all this and they show all the different versions of Galactus as he appeared to different creatures.
So cool.
Yeah. It's really, it's just a great character, right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
in the show, I don't know if he does this in the comics, but he rides around in this spaceship that has...
He does, yeah.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
That has, like, a million, like, robotic tentacles coming out the bottom,
yeah.
and they sink into the planet below, and that's how he gets his sustenance.
Right.
Through these, like, they're like Dr. Octopus arms,
but,
sort of,
like,
but, like, a lot of them.
And really big.
And they come out of the bottom of his, like, flying saucer spaceship, and the middle of that spaceship has all these, like... psychedelic little dots
mm-hmm.
fluttering around.
That's the Kirby energy. That's the famous Kirby energy art design that
yeah,
he created.
Yeah, it looks great in the show. I love it.
Yeah, so the show is very influenced by Jack Kirby's art, and there are references to Jack Kirby in the show, which is pretty cool. There's something called, like, the Kirby Cluster.
Uh-huh.
In one episode, they called the Kirby Cluster, and then in another episode, they called the Kirby League Cluster.
I thought it was the Kirby League Quadrant.
Okay, maybe it's that. But either way, like, I think they add the Lee in, like, the last episode.
Oh,
it
yeah.
wasn't at first introduced as that. Maybe I just not remembering correctly. Anyway, so yeah, so that's Galactus' deal. He shows up on Zenlaw. He's going to destroy it. Silver Surfer gets in a spaceship, and he flies to Galactus, and he begs for his planet's life. Galactus, like, laughs. He says, there's nothing you could offer me.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what if I, like, find you other planets faster so you wouldn't have to be searching all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And that turned out to be really smart because Galactus is like, yeah, I guess I do spend a lot of time looking for these worlds and I get so hungry. Like, the great hunger falls upon me that it would be helpful to have you search the universe for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he agrees to this. And Silver Surfer's like, I don't know if he says it out loud or he just thinks it to himself. He's like, great, I'll lead Galactus to worlds without intelligent life. Worlds that have life, because he can only eat world. He can't eat Mars, which is a dead world.
Right.
He can't eat Jupiter.
It needs to have life energy on it. That's
right.
What he feeds on.
Yeah, so he's like, great. Norrin Radd thinks to himself, I'll just lead him to worlds that are not yet have intelligent life, and I'll save a lot of life.
Yeah.
Galactus, I guess, suspects this. He's like, fuck that. He turns Norrin Radd into the Silver Surfer, and he erases his mind.
I don't think it's that he suspects it. I think it's that it's like he knows that if the Silver Surfer has all of Norrin Radd's memories
oh,
and
yeah.
life experiences, then at some point he's like not gonna want to do this job anymore. He's gonna want to go home and be with his girlfriend.
Right. He wants a totally loyal slave to him.
Right.
Right. So,
I don't think he even knows or cares about whatever plan Norrin Rad is cooking up about like saving intelligent life.
Yeah.
He just wipes his memory clean so that he can have like a essentially
a more loyal tool at his disposal.
Yeah, right.
So he does this, and like one of the most badass moments of the series, speaking of badassery, this is a badass moment, but on the part of Galactus.
Yeah.
So he turns him into the Silver Surfer, which is actually, it's such an awesome transformation. Just the Galactus explaining like what he is now.
Right.
He gives him a silvery coating that'll protect him from the heat of the center of a star or the vast coldness of space.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives him a surfboard. Oh, he says he'll never need to eat or breathe or drink water again, you know, and he gives him a surfboard that he can fly around in that could like fly faster than the speed of light, can open up wormholes, can travel anywhere. It's like fully responsive to Silver Surfer's commands.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great invention. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Jack Kirby says he gave him a surfboard because he was tired of drawing spaceships, which is a funny, like a half genius invention in that sense. Anyway, so this is the badass moment where he turns him into Silver Surfer, he erases his mind, and he's like, Harold, I need you to find me a planet so that I could, abate my great hunger. And Silver Surfer just looks down at Zen Lai and is like, oh, how about this one? And Glass is like, no, I made a promise to an old friend that I would never touch this planet.
Yeah.
And he's like, and Silver Surfer's like, shrugs his shoulders, like, all right, I'll find you a world. And then off he goes, like, and that's sort of the origin.
Right.
And it's sad because he finds planets filled with life, and he calls Galactus right away, and Galactus eats him up real quick.
Yeah.
And Galactus is very satisfied because he's never eaten so well or as quickly.
Right.
Since he's like, I should have come up with this Herald idea a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Silver Surfer's doing this, he feels tremendous guilt. As he's like, I don't know why I feel guilty, but look at all these poor people defending themselves. Don't they know they're doomed and Galactus needs to eat?
Yeah.
He's like, if only I could put my finger on it. Like, what's wrong with me?
I'm actually, like, pretty surprised that Galactus would refuse to eat Zen La in that beginning part.
The thing is, Galactus's word is truer than any word anyone can ever promise.
Uh-huh.
Uatu the Watcher, I think, makes a point of that. I don't know if he does it in the cartoon or remember. He definitely does it in the comics. So when Galactus makes you a promise, like, I will leave Earth alone, which is the Fantastic Four get him off the planet. They save the world. And Reed Richards is like, how can I trust you? And Watch is like, you could trust Galactus. His word is truer than, you know, gold or something.
Right, okay.
So he has no need to lie.
I see.
So anyway, Silver Surfer, like, It's tragic. He's now like an accomplice to mass genocide.
Right. And he makes many enemies as a result.
Yes. And it's a really interesting subplot throughout the whole show.
Yeah.
All the people that manage to survive the destructions of their worlds and civilizations, they end up banding together as like a community.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just bent on revenge.
Right.
They form like a star fleet and they're just trying. It's like they're both so tragically sad.
It's just like, it's so awesome because it's justified, you know, like the Silver Surfer is our hero, and yet, like, all these people that hate him and are out to get him are, like, 100% correct.
Yeah.
And it's, like, in all the other superhero stories, you know, like, there's always times when people hate Spider-Man or hate Batman or whatever it is, and it's always like, oh, it's some big misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Our hero is good and true. Whereas in the Silver Surfer, it's like, yeah, no, that's actually, like, 100% right.
This is a good comic book debate. I always never knew how to feel. Remember in Captain America Civil War, Bucky, it's revealed he's the Winter Soldier. Iron Man discovers that he killed his parents on a mission in the early 90s. And, of course, the Winter Soldier was under brain control by Hydra.
Yeah.
And he didn't mean to do it. He was just ordered to do it. So, and Iron Man gets murderously jealous and he wants to kill him. Captain America is trying to save him because he's his best friend and he knows that he was manipulated to do it.
Yeah.
And there's a line in the movie where Captain America's like, I gotta protect you. And he's like, well, you know, all those things I did, I wasn't in control, but I did them.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm guilty.
Right.
And in my mind, I'm like, it's interesting that he feels that way, but is he guilty? I feel like if you brainwash somebody to do something against their control, you are not guilty. And I sided with Captain America protecting the Winter Soldier at the end from Iron Man trying to kill Bucky. You know, and Iron Man was so betrayed. He's like, I thought we were friends. Why are you protecting this guy? He killed my parents.
Right.
Like, how could you get in the way? It's like, dude, he didn't kill your parents. The creeps in Hydra, like, kidnapped this dude and brainwashed him to kill your parents like a robot.
Yeah, right.
So, Bucky, like, feels responsible. And so now the debate is the same thing as Silver Surfer. Like, should he feel guilty for being the unwitting pawn of Galactus? Because in the show, he feels fucking guilty.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He feels very guilty, and he feels deserving of punishment.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about
it? Should he? I mean...
Yeah, I don't know. It's a philosophical question.
I don't know if he should, but I think, like... It feels ridiculous to say if I were in his position, but if I were in his position, I would feel guilty.
You would feel guilty because you'd feel so bad and monstrous that, like, it came from you.
Yeah.
That you were the vehicle for which it happened.
Right.
But it's still not the same. You know, we just saw X-Men First Class last week in our last episode.
Yeah.
And Magneto meets some former Nazis, and right before he kills them, they try to defend themselves. They're like, we were just following orders.
Right.
And he's like, I'm tired of being at the mercy of men who just followed orders. Like,
right.
That's not a good excuse. But to me, Magneto's right, because it's not the same. You might have just been following orders. You might have just been a schmo in Germany who got maybe even drafted into the Nazi army.
Yeah.
And you were following orders. But really, like, you weren't brainwashed to do it. I mean, I know that a lot of the
Germans... You are brainwashed to do it if that's your situation, I think. But
in the army you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. They brainwash you to an extent, like, you have to swear loyalty. But still, it's like human beings don't lose their capacity. They're not truly brainwashed.
Right. You still... able to tell the difference between right and wrong.
Absolutely. Hopefully. You know, like, killing is bad, you know, when you're doing, like, shady shit.
Okay, so then, like, the Silver Surfer, as he's been brainwashed, right? But little by little, he starts developing a guilty conscience about this
stuff. He starts to slowly remember his former life.
But even without, like, remembering his former life exactly, he starts feeling guilty about all the life that's being lost because...
Right.
He's showing Galactus the way to these planets where people are going to die, right?
Yeah.
So he...
And we get an idea of Silver Surfer's immense power. So he wields what's known as the power cosmic,
right.
Which is Galactus's primary source of power. And I guess the Silver Surfer just has, like, a smaller magnitude of it, but it's immensely insane. It's like energy just drawn right from... the universe. It's like dark energy or something, right? Like, it's some unfathomable energy. And so there's, like, a scene where he's going to a super highly advanced technological world that he's calling Galactus, and they know who the Silver Surfer is, and they're firing all their planetary defenses at him, like lines and lines of laser turrets in outer space and on the ground just blasting the Silver Surfer.
Uh-huh.
And the Silver Surfer is immune to it, and he's just holding out his hand very casually, shooting an enormous beam of energy, destroying all their, well-protected
badass,
technology.
No?
Yeah, that's true. That's badass.
Right.
His power level is to 10.
Anyway, what I was going to say is that even though he, like, has his memory erased, like, he clearly still has some kind of moral compass because he starts feeling bad about killing
his former life is
dying.
Leaking into his brain.
And so, but he still goes ahead with it for, like, several planets for, like, a very long time.
We don't know how long, but you're right,
before anything happens. So
billions, if not trillions, die at the hand of the Silver Surfer.
Right, so it's like, all right, fine, like, he was brainwashed or whatever, had his memory erased, but, like, he still had some kind of conscience. He still had, like, some idea of that what was going on was wrong, and he kept doing it.
But he doesn't... I still absolve him a bit because we see in the show that he still doesn't quite know. He says out loud, it's like, what are these memories? Are they real? You know, like, who am I? Like, should I be thinking these thoughts?
Right.
It's like the programming isn't, like, quite... It's like breaking down. So maybe in those moments you're right. Like, the fact that he starts to remember feeling guilty is a sign...
No, it's not that he remembers feeling guilty.
Right, yeah.
Or it's not even that he remembers his life. It's that he does feel guilty because he's leading Galactus to kill people.
But he doesn't quite know why... It doesn't seem like he understands what morality is, though, in those moments. That's the thing.
Right.
So anyway, he ends up at Earth. Like, this is the conclusion of the three-part origin. And unlike the comics where he meets the Fantastic Four and, you know, that's a whole adventure there.
Yeah.
The Fantastic Four are involved.
No, we don't see or hear from them.
Right.
Ever.
And another, like, dumb thing that, like, they make It's like too much on the nose. Galactus comments like, "Ah, Earth, this planet has more life energy than any I've ever discovered."
Yeah,
I find that just like a bit.
That's too much for you.
Oh, it's not that's too much. It's just, it's like, why is it? It's like Silver Surfer being like the next in line to rule Zen Law. Like, it's just, what a coincidence that our planet
is the tastiest planet.
Right, yeah. So anyway, something happens on Earth where he remembers everything, and then he turns against Galactus.
Right.
And he demands his freedom, and Galactus grants it to him. He says, but, you know, wherever you go, the power cosmic will be a curse on you, not a gift.
Right.
And also, he hides Zen Law from him.
He tosses it very far out into the universe.
To a somewhere. Place where he doesn't even know where he threw it.
Right.
Which doesn't make sense, because it's a planet presumably orbiting a star. Seems like it would be destroyed the second he throws it somewhere.
And he tossed the whole star, let's say.
Okay, right, the whole star system. Yeah. All right, yeah. And in Silver Surfer's place, he recruits a new herald, this young teenage girl from Earth named Nova.
Yes.
Who's a real spunky character. She's sort of made of flames.
What's her real name? Frankie?
Yeah, I think Frankie, right. So the difference between Nova is, for some reason, Galactus doesn't wipe her memory. He allows her... to keep it. Oh, there's a reason why. Because she seems to have the power to always find what she's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very useful to Galactus.
Right. That's not a power that he gave her. She no. just was always lucky with that.
Is she a mutant?
Thing.
I don't know. I don't know the full backstory on Nova.
Yeah.
Someone can let us know. But the point is, like, she's got this preternatural power to discover what she's looking for. And so she takes up the Silver Surfer's well-meaning goal at the beginning. She's only going to find planets that have no intelligent life,
mm-hmm.
that have the nutrients Galactus needs. So she's going to not be stained with genocide. And she's a recurring character in the show, and she's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoyed her.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, so that's the beginning of the show. And then, like, let's just generally talk about, like, what you expect when you watch this series. You meet... a lot of the members of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Although they're not together as a team. They're right. totally individuals.
But Gamora... Well, they call her Gamora.
No, they call her Gamora.
Right? Gamora, that's right.
Right, they don't call her Gamora.
Yeah.
Her, like, life goal, instead of... In the movies, she's trying to kill Thanos.
Right.
She hates Thanos. But in this show, her revenge is against Galactus, who destroyed her home world. She's, like, leading part of the excised wandering group of destroyed civilizations.
Right.
She's one of their top warriors. You meet Nebula.
Mm-hmm. Her sister.
Are they...
In this, they don't say
that. I don't think they're supposed to be sisters here. She's yeah. just like a bad guy in the show.
Right.
Not necessarily tied to Thanos. You meet Drax.
You meet Thanos.
Yeah, Thanos. He's the major bad guy besides Galactus.
Yeah, he has a skull spaceship that he flies around in,
which is really awesome.
With Lady Death renamed Chaos.
Right, renamed. They can't, because of censorship, they can't call her Lady Death. So this is the more traditional comic book Thanos, not what we see in the movies, where his motivation in the comics was that he worships Lady Death. Because he's trying to, like, impress her or fall... He's in love with her.
Uh-huh.
And he wants a romantic relationship. But it's creepy because he just has, like, a carved statue of her in a spaceship.
Yeah.
It's an inanimate object.
It's weird. They don't really explain, like, where it came from or what it's doing there.
I think
but
he like, has it.
Talks to it all the time.
It's not like it's real. It's just, like, this thing, you know?
Yeah. Like an icon of her.
Right. He believes it to be real. The weird thing is, she is real.
Right.
I don't think she comes to life in this show. But
there's one episode where he, like, hallucinates that she comes to life.
Right.
So we get to see what she would be like as a character, I guess.
Yeah.
But
so his belief is that if he kills enough people, that Lady Death will bestow favor upon him and come to life and, like, give him love,
mm-hmm.
which is insane. Which, I like that plot element of Thanos. I guess it was too crazy to make work in a movie.
Yeah.
But I still think it works narratively and dramatically. It's interesting to me, at least. It's interesting because Death is a character in the Marvel Universe,
mm-hmm.
much like other characters we meet, Eternity in Infinity and Infinity.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome in this show.
Yeah, so it's like Death is one of them, and Galactus is technically one of those beings as well.
Mm.
So, like, there's all these, like, meta super beings in the Marvel Universe, and Silver Surfer's like encountering them on his travels,
yeah,
which is always a lot of fun. That's like to me the most fun part of the comics and the cartoon in general. As Silver Surfer flies to the edges of the universe and meets the most powerful beings you could possibly meet. Mm-hmm. Ego, he meets the living planet we see in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah,
I mentioned Drax, who's voiced by Norm Spencer, who's Cyclops, which uh-huh. is kind of interesting. You know, he's got this like troll friend named Pip. Uh-huh. I guess he's a slave he liberates on some Kree or Skrull slave world.
Right.
And oh, and we meet the Kree and the Skrull, mm-hmm. which are the two main like
alien species.
Yeah, that are like conquering the like galaxy.
Yeah.
And they're super bloodthirsty groups that have been at war for forever.
Yeah.
Essentially, and they enslave planets and they're ruthless. And the Skrulls are interesting because they're shapeshifters. They look like green Martian people, mm-hmm. and they can turn into whoever. I think they're ruled. There's like a Skrull queen that they all take orders from. Although in the show, there's some intrigue there.
Yeah,
won't get into it. And then the Kree are ruled by a hive mind, and they're like blue people. And we've seen the Kree in the Marvel movies. I think they're in Thor 2. No, they're in they're in Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Yeah,
I think Ronan is a Kree. And he's this blue dude that is trying to steal a power stone or something.
Right.
Thanos sends him out to get a stone, and he betrays Thanos. He wants to rule for himself. Mm-hmm. And the Skrulls we're going to see in the Captain Marvel movie, finally. Anyway, so, like, that's the background of the show. Lots of adventures happen. Oh, we meet Uatu, the Watcher.
Right.
He's the bald-headed dude that sees everything.
Right, yeah.
He's an interesting character. We saw him in The Watchers. We saw them in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I believe. They show mm-hmm. up in a cameo.
Yeah, and there's, like, an episode in this series where they show, like, his whole race of people.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
The coolest thing about Uatu the Watcher is he appears as, like, this weird visage whenever something amazing is happening in the universe. And so
he's another one, like, really bad at his job. Like, yeah. He's sworn not to interfere, right. But he just can't yeah. help it.
Well, that's the whole plot of the original comic book. When the Silver Surfer appears, he breaks his vow of non-interference.
Yeah.
So he's part of this, like, immortal race from the being of the universe. It's just their entire mission is just to watch the whole universe unfold and record it. So he breaks his vow of non-interference to warn the Fantastic Four about Galactus. That's how they stand a chance against him.
Yeah.
So in this show, it's cool, like, you see, there's an episode where Galactus is dying, and he's about to die, and Uatu just appears, like, in the clouds, like, watching. And it's commented that, ooh, Uatu only appears when something really insane is going on in the universe. You know, he has to, like, get a front row seat. I think he appears in the Dark Phoenix saga in the comic books, too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the extent of, like, how awesome Uatu is. Like, you know a Marvel comic is really amazing when Uatu appears to, like, watch our heroes, you know, do battle or whatever it might be.
Right.
So he's a great character. And so, like, what are some of the themes of the show that we see?
Themes of the show. I mean, I don't know.
Genocide is one.
Yeah.
Imperialism.
I guess so.
You know, when you see the bloodthirstiness of, like, the Kree and Skrull battling.
Right.
Slavery. You know, there's a really sad slavery episode when he liberates Pip. You know, these poor slaves are just consigned to their fate.
That's
mining,
true.
They're just mining crystals that enslave them or something.
I feel like the X-Men themes are a lot more overt and, again, relatable to
right.
it,
these
like,
are
general
more subtle.
Audiences. Yeah, I mean, I guess these are themes because they come up, but it's not, like, translatable really to real life, I don't think.
Right, they're huge philosophical themes.
Yeah.
They're, like, big meta themes about life, death, morality, ethics, a lot of crazy stuff like that. And it's no surprise the show got canceled.
I know, I think
it's... Like, it probably flew over the heads of a lot of kids. But it's not, like, when you watch it, it's not so complicated.
No, it's just like a silver man flying through outer space.
It's well written. It makes sense, you know.
Beautiful, sparkly outer space.
It's just the ideas are very big and heavy.
Yeah.
So, it's just like a really great show. And, Thanos is the main villain.
I guess morality is the main theme of the show, right?
Right.
Like, that's, it deals with the imperialism, slavery...
And it deals with atonement. How does Silver Surfer atone for what he's done?
Right.
Like, he gets put on trial in one episode it's really sad, all his accusers. You know, they're totally vindicated and wanting to sentence him to death. There's like another great episode with Beta Ray Bill and his people. Like, these are the horse people, mm-hmm. and they just live in this perpetual virtual reality where, like, right. they're like living this ideal, perfect world and everything's great. But the reality is they're wandering around like drones on like a half dead planet, mm-hmm. like really like sick and slovenly because they're all wearing like they
it's
have
like a Ready Player One sort of situation.
Right? Yeah, it's like a WALL-E situation or something. Right. Like a scenario where a world is just lost in virtual reality, and if you see it as an outsider, it looks like they're really sad and pathetic.
Yeah.
And that actually happens to another character. We meet Adam Warlock, too, another famous Marvel character. Mm. He's, like, trapped in some, like, phantom dimension or something, perpetually defending his home planet and always being victorious and just repeats forever and forever.
Yeah.
Silver Surfer rescues him and brings him to the real world and says, your planet's been destroyed for, like, thousands of years. You're free to, like, join me now. And he's like, I can't even, like, I can't live knowing that.
Right.
And he decides to just go back into the dimension zone that's going to close up forever and just continue to, like, live in a fantasy.
Yeah.
It's, like, really sad and heartbreaking.
Yeah, he can't deal.
Yeah.
I guess loneliness is another one that's yeah. kind of comes up again and again.
It's a big theme.
He's constantly on his surfboard pining for Shalabal, who he never, like, really sees again.
Yeah, so, except, like, love. So he's, yeah. like, believes in true love. Shalabal is his soulmate through space and time. He's tortured without her. He's constantly pining for her and
it's
calling her name.
It's, like, stupid how the people in Zenla always use first and last name.
Yeah.
They never just call him Norrin. It's always Norrin Rad.
Right.
So, yeah. I guess, is Shalabal's first name Shala and her last name is Baal?
Good question. No idea.
Anyways, he's always pining after her. And
she's this, like, raven haired beauty.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer. I mean, they're like true love of like a true romance, and he's sacrificed everything to save her and the planet.
I have this feeling that if this series continued to a natural end, they would have been reunited.
Well, they are in the comics many times. Like, yeah. that's the thing. And okay. then it turns out, like, they move past each other, I think, because she ends up ruling Zenla and she's got other priorities, and he meets other women as well. So his true love for Shalabal is, you know, it reminds me of Angel and Buffy. Like, if you watch that show, like, Angel has this, like, undying love for Buffy, and it could never, their true love can never be questioned until he gets his own TV series and falls in love with, like, four other characters that were all Buffy's, like, close friends or
yeah,
something.
Right.
And it's like, all right, you know.
So much for true love.
Right. I guess it doesn't matter.
It's good storytelling.
Yeah.
What else?
All right. So, and the show ends on a, sadly, on a cliffhanger. It's like a part one.
Yeah.
It ends on a the end question mark. They wrote 8 scripts for season 2, which I think you can read online, but they were never produced.
Yeah. They could have posthumously taken away that question mark because right. it was, in fact, the end.
But they say on Wikipedia that the reason the show was canceled is because there was a licensing disagreement between Saban and Marvel. Mm. So, like, who knows what happened there. Saban, a notoriously shady company. It's a big shame. I mean, the show is awesome.
Yeah.
It's really worth watching.
It's really fun.
It's Marvel at its finest. It's peak X-Men, it's like season 1 or season 2 quality.
Mm-hmm.
If you love the seriousness of the X-Men cartoon in the first few seasons with the serialization, you get all of that in this series with X-Men voice acting.
How many stars do you give this?
5 stars.
Out of 5?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I want to talk about, before we go, some more Silver Surfer stuff. You know, he appeared in the movies.
Okay.
In Fantastic Four 2, Rise of the Silver Surfer, a notoriously god-awful movie. Have you ever seen it?
Nope.
Wow. I don't even know if I want to show it to you. It's really bad.
I never really bought in with the Fantastic Four for some reason.
Well, the movies were bad. Yeah. So if you ever saw the first one and didn't care about them, that might have been a reason.
That might have been why, yeah.
The cartoon show, I think it had its moments. I don't fully remember it, but it was kind of corny. It wasn't as good as X-Men or Silver Surfer here, mm-hmm. or Spider-Man. But they've never really been done justice in a live-action medium. That's the thing. So everyone's really happy that with Disney getting the rights back to the characters, they'll do a good Fantastic Four movie. I think they will. They're really the first characters Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created together that launched the Marvel Universe. You know, they're the archetypes for all the superheroes that followed in the Marvel mm-hmm. continuity. And so many of those their early stories are great, classic, like, unbeatable, you know, moments in comic book history. So it's a shame that it just hasn't been done right yet. Anyway, point is, Fantastic Four 2 Rise of Silver Surfer is so bad. Galactus is never appears. He's just a big giant cloud that doesn't speak or anything. It's really lame. The Silver Surfer himself is underserved as a character. He doesn't look quite right. It's just a huge waste of everything. I mean, it's fairly close to the comic in a sense. It's close enough to the comic, but it doesn't matter. It's just really bad. I'd steer clear of that. Hopefully we get a Silver Surfer movie in the future one day.
I'm sure he's not high on the priority list for
Marvel. I don't know. This is why I wanted to bring it up, because it'd be cool. My idea for a Silver Surfer movie, first of all, full-blown IMAX 3D. You know, I don't like 3D movies, but in this case, I would want it. Maybe it doesn't do 3D, but IMAX for sure, right? Just, like, open it with 20 minutes of silence. you see the Silver Surfer surfing through outer space in the most glorious vistas imaginable, you know, like going, I want to see him fly into the center of a sun. I want to see what that looks like. I want to see him stop in the middle of a sun for a minute and just look around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I want to go into astronomical anomalies, into astronomical objects, like fly into the center of a galaxy, you know, go to see a supernova explode. Like, take me on a tour of the universe, Silver Surfer, of a realistic presentation in the universe.
Yeah, we know it's possible. Like, I feel like after we saw, I forget which one of the Thor movies.
Yeah.
Both of us were like, I mean, the movie was okay, but the outer space was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You know? They can make it look really pretty. You know, I want like a, give me like almost an art film for the first, it doesn't have to be 20 minutes, maybe 5 to 10 minutes of like almost like of silence. Give me an idea of how lonely and isolated the sky is, but surrounded by so much beauty, you know?
Yeah.
And make his CGI body like reflect like the cool cosmos stuff, you know what I mean? Just like the way that they could just use light and reflections and things. There's just something elementally beautiful about the character that need that can be expressed in cinema that I think needs to happen.
They did it well in the animated series, I would say. I mean, it's not realistic because you know, space is like mostly empty blackness, but
he's more white than shiny silvery.
Yeah.
In the show, in the cartoon, but whatever.
But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, the outer space vistas were, like, really gorgeously rendered.
Right.
I could stand to see that in some more movies.
Right. Like, wouldn't that be, like, a cool... Like, you don't even, like, have to... You get into the plot, do all that stuff, but you give us... Allow a movie to breathe with some art.
Yeah.
Because that's, to me, what the Silver Surfer is. He's, like, psychedelic character from the psychedelic 60s, you know, that's all about philosophy and ethics and larger-than-life ideas. He's all about astronomy and cosmology and maybe even astrology. Like, I don't know. Like, and just about, like, strange worlds and just, like, elemental things, you know, the cosmos, cosmic power. And I just like the idea that he's surfing out there in outer space, too.
There's something, like, kind of goofy about it, you know, with the surfboard, but, like, I like it for some reason.
It's just, like I said, there's something, a wish fulfillment aspect of the character.
Yeah.
It's like if you could...
Endless exploration.
If somebody gave you the powers of the Silver Surfer, it would be really wonderful.
Yeah, you know? Totally. I mean, when I was, like, a little kid dreaming about being an astronaut, like, this is totally what I thought it would be.
It'd
like.
It'd be better than being... he's better than an astronaut.
Exactly, because like he can actually, like, go anywhere, do anything, doesn't need a spacesuit.
Yeah, like, he's like a real star child.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great thing about a Marvel
a real star child. Yeah. What is that?
A reference to 2001 Space Odyssey, the ending, right? See. Isn't the star child at the end born like in a fetus in space or something, you know, a fetus bubble? I mean, Marvel, that's why Silver Surfer's up there, I think, with Spider-Man in terms of wish fulfillment. Because you would love to have Spider-Man's powers, too, I think.
Yeah, but I would even more love to have Silver Surfer's powers.
I know, but I agree with that. But I'm saying, like, the specific, the fantasy, though, to be, Spider-Man is such a wonderful character to imagine being. You know, just web-slinging around skyscrapers and stuff, and, like, his agility and the way his costume looks perfect. It's like a thing of pure 60s pop art. Like, I think, like, Silver Surfer and Spider-Man are in the same category of, like, wouldn't it be really wonderful to be those characters in real life?
Yeah.
To be able to move with that kind of freedom and movement. You know, and I think Marvel has a lot of those characters like that are really awesome. I think, to a large extent, Wolverine is like that, too, with his claws. There's just something... It makes him, like, the coolest fighter ever. that he's got six blades coming out of his hands in that perfectly parallel way. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's so dangerous and so fearsome, you know?
Yeah.
It's like there's, like, those little details on all these different Marvel characters really make them wonderful, like, some more so than others. So think the Silver Surfer's in, like, the upper crust of wish-fulfillment fantasy. Mm. So, yeah, hope to get a Silver Surfer movie one day. If not, maybe in a new cartoon or a new TV series. I think he'll show up in the movies as, like, a side character. I think that's where Marvel will place him. I'm pretty sure that Galactus will be the next huge villain that is, like, the omni-villain like Thanos was in these last movies. It'll be, like, Galactus will be hinted at or shown briefly for, like, 10 movies before you finally, like, get him coming to Earth.
Yeah.
And then through that, we'll see the Silver Surfer probably, you know, so.
I hope so. I could do with more Silver Surfer content.
Yeah, me too. So, you know, this has been like a long rambling one here. We're just like, you know, talking about 13 random episodes of a show many of you probably have not have watched. But I really do recommend.
Yeah, if you haven't, go watch it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's great for anybody, really. You don't have to be a fan of Marvel even, too. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this show, you are. But just tell your friends. A really great show. 5 stars. Any final words on the Silver Surfer, Sonya?
Shalabal!
I should have waited. So, yeah, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Not the Silver Surfer Task Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah,
that'd be cool,
exist.
Too. If that exists, if it does exist, join that. I'm sure it's awesome.
Yeah.
rate and review is 5 stars on wherever you rate and review podcasts. Sonya, any final words before we get going?
No, I guess not.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.